Last night's Democratic presidential candidates matchup is being called the messy debate.
Let's talk about it.
Tanya Mosley is leading our team in South Carolina. She'll anchor from there tomorrow. But producers spoke with audience members after the debate. Tamika Weston says she's still undecided, but she liked the way moderates on stage aggressively went after the frontrunner Bernie Sanders.
You were weeding out the weakness. So I do think that strategy kind of helped. It just helped weed out the weak from the strong.
Montrese Brown is also undecided. She noticed how often the candidates talked about issues important to the black community, but worried that attention won't last beyond Saturday's primary.
You know, it gets discussed so much during this time, and once the cameras are gone, you know, well, they're always gone once they're elected, but why aren't we discussing this 365? Like, that's a little concerning to me.
Let's bring in our political strategist joining us today, Angela Rye, Democratic strategist. Hi, Angela.
Hi.
And John Brabender, Republican strategist. Hi, John.
Hello.
Okay, so Bernie Sanders went into the debate with the momentum. Then this morning, Joe Biden got the endorsement of Jim Clyburn, a very influential black member of Congress in South Carolina. Angela, did the dynamics of the race shift at all last night or this morning?
I don't think so. Even with Congressman Clyburn, who's not only an influential member in South Carolina, but throughout the country as the majority whip for the House of Representatives, I think even with that, people either don't know and they won't know until they go cast their votes, or they know and they're dug in. Congressman Clyburn's own grandson, for example, is knocking on doors right now in South Carolina for Pete Buttigieg. So this is a very generational election where folks are picking their horses, so to speak, based on who speaks to them most and not necessarily based on the endorsement of someone they love and respect.
John Brabender, if you had to bet right now, who is going to be the nominee of the Democratic Party? We've got, of course, South Carolina and then Super Tuesday next week. Who is your bet for the nominee?
Well, what I would do is first I'd place a bet on South Carolina, which I would actually bet on Joe Biden. I actually think he will win South Carolina. But I actually give the lead right now to Bernie Sanders. I think one thing people aren't understanding quite yet about this election is the how the younger voters are going to change the electorate. Roughly 37 to 40% of the voters in the fall are going to be either Generation Z or millennials, and it's bigger in the Democrat primary. So when states like California coming up and so forth, you know, that's Bernie Sanders' land to get a lot of those voters, and I really believe he'll be the nominee.
Well, you know, you both mentioned generation, so I want you to listen to something. Bernie Sanders, of course, expected a pile-on, and he really got some of it with Pete Buttigieg. Let's listen.
Do we think health care for all, Pete, is some kind of radical communist idea? Do
Wayne
we think raising
Let's talk about
the minimum wage to
I'm
a living
to
wage?
To the question
Do we think building?
Well, it went on. And Angela, I heard someone watching with me say something like, come on, Mayor Pete, show some respect. They saw it as kind of Pete's OK boomer moment to Sanders, the amount of times that he was talking over him. There is a generational divide here. Who wins? Who won coming out of last night?
I don't know that I can pick a winner. I think if we go off of what the standards have been for debates during this primary season, it is the person who experiences the most amount of attacks, and that was very clearly Bernie Sanders. There were a number of candidates on the stage who wish to not only distance themselves, but distance the Democratic Party from what has been branded socialism. But as we know, Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist, which, you know, for some folks, that's semantics. For others, there's a very big distinction.
Well, there is a distinction. I mean, it doesn't mean changing the marketplace or getting rid of capitalism. It means more of a government safety net, right?
Right. Yeah. But all I'm saying is that people aren't choosing to listen to how he defines himself. They're instead choosing to brand him because they think he's the most dangerous. The reason why John, for example, I hate to put words in your mouth, but I suspect the reason why John is saying I see him as the front runner is because there are a lot of Republicans that hope he will be the front runner. So that's what we have, and that's where we are right now, and it is still too early to call.
Well, John, take that up. Do you have fingers crossed?
You know, we're being very cautious because I remember last time all my Democrat friends would say, oh, boy, please be Donald Trump, because there's no way Donald Trump's going to be president. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand that we're living in a different world now. And there's a reason Sanders is doing so well in national polls is because there's a certain segment of the population who feel like they're being left on the economic battlefield. They felt like they've been left that under for decades under both parties. And they see Bernie Sanders in many ways as a third party candidate that they're rallying behind. That's why I also don't think the hits on Bernie are going to resonate as much. Because they see him as a different type of candidate.
Just jump in to say, I just can't forget that when we were in Iowa in 2016, I called back hair on fire to say, I'm hearing a lot of people trying to decide then between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Because as you just said, John, they saw them both as disruptors. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a big part of what the rest of the Democrat primary is going to be. I mean, if you noticed last night, Biden went after Steyer, right? Why? Because he's playing for those voters. But if you look at Buttigieg, he went after Sanders a lot more. Why? He needs those voters. So also, when you start seeing this attack back forth, understand why they're doing it and who they're targeting is purely to see what voters they can pick up.
John, you just don't like saying Democratic, do you?
I know. And I get called out on
right.
You know what? I only get called out on that on NPR. I think it's more of a
not
it's,
on Fox
it's not
News.
Intentional. I just want you to know that. It's more a poor grammar.
Okay. So. Let me ask you about something.
I don't believe you, John.
Okay. Angela, let me ask you this question about Pete Buttigieg last night. He made this point, which has been made by others, saying that Sanders as the nominee would be bad for down ballot races in the House and Senate. Listen.
Look, hello. If you want to keep the House in Democratic hands, you might want to check with the people who actually turned the House blue. 40 Democrats who are not running 41. On your platform. They are running away from your platform as fast as they possibly can.
Now, Angela, today Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, said that she would be okay with Sanders. She's not worried about that. But what do you think? Are you hearing that there would be concern among, you know, House and Senate Democrats running for election if Sanders is at the top of the ticket?
There will be concern from House and Senate Democrats if Bernie Sanders is at the top of the ticket. But there will also be concern from House and Senate Democrats if it's Buttigieg, if it's Warren, if it's Klobuchar. We have a big tent, and it is time for us to be called to the carpet on that. It is not a party that has a defining ideology. It is not a party anymore, and I don't know if it ever was, but there's finally this Democratic process online, on digital, on social media, where people who don't have Bloomberg money but have a Bloomberg voice are being heard. And they're being called to the carpet on that. You even interviewed someone earlier in this segment where she says as soon as she said they're always gone after they're elected. That is a sentiment that is broadly shared, whether you are a black voter in South Carolina or you are a white blue-collar worker in Appalachia. It is time for elected officials of all at every level, but especially at the top, to be accountable to the people who they were talking to, pandering to, eating with, churching with, you know, all of that, sitting down for interviews with throughout their terms, not just during the election, and certainly not just during the primary.
Okay. I think if we look back on this conversation 10 years from now, depending on how things go with the coronavirus, we would be wrong not to talk about it. So let's just spend the last couple of minutes on that. John, what is at stake for President Trump tonight when he gives his press conference on this after a day of confusing messages yesterday? Trump said the coronavirus is very well under control. Hours later, his health secretary said there aren't enough masks and ventilators. The acting Homeland Security Secretary couldn't answer basic questions about vaccines. And the stock market plummeted. What's at stake?
Yeah, well, the good news is my understanding of the stock market is coming back up a bit. But with that said, what people really want to hear is they understand we're in uncharted territories. They want to understand, though, that this is something that is taking the president's taking this as serious as it should be. They announced at the White House, I don't know if they made a decision, that they're thinking of assigning a specific health care czar to handle this particular crisis by itself. I think people want to understand that there's a plan, they're taking it seriously, that they are planning for what could be the worst of it. And I think that's probably how the president will come across.
Well, Angela, do Democrats make a mistake by politicizing this now? I mean, John said, appoint somebody. Well, the CDC's been gutted, you know.
Right.
But if the Democrats go in that direction, you know, don't people want to see their lawmakers pull together as a team when there's a crisis?
There is no pulling together. We've been in crisis since he won in 2016, and I think this is just another one. There's been man-made disasters, and there's natural disasters and pandemics, and this is one of them. And I think the reality of it is we expect our leaders, regardless of political party and affiliation, regardless of ideology, to be both responsible and empathetic, and he has demonstrated time after time his inability to do that. He is not capable of doing what needs to be done in the highest office of the land, but yet here we are. And so there are other people, hopefully in his administration, who can hold his hand and help him get to the right side of this issue, which is protecting everyone on these shores and abroad.
And John, is there an additional concern with this president? You only have a few seconds, but he is a germaphobe. And there's been speculation he doesn't want to hear or talk about a virus.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that type of talk is ridiculous. I mean, the truth of the matter is the left does like to say, oh, this president, he doesn't have empathy, anything. There's a reason why right now most people think he's going to be reelected. People understand he has turned this economy around to a great economy. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to just demonstrate that he's going to treat this with the same seriousness he does the economy, and people will have full confidence.
Actually, Trump is losing against some of the top Democrats in some polls, but we will stay on this with Job Brabender, the Republican strategist, Angela Rye, the Democrat. Thank you both.
Thank you.